Glad you're along today. Sex education will be changing soon in the East Lansing schools. Back on Monday, the East Lansing School Board voted 7-0 to reallow guest educators to teach about sex in the district's classrooms. Now, outside speakers were pulled from the district last spring when a participating organization's approach to teaching abstinence led to a wave of criticism. It began with a series of tweets from a high school parent during an educational session she attended with her freshman son. That parent is our next guest. Alice Drager is an historian of medicine, science, and sexuality who lives here in East Lansing. The 45 tweets she generated while observing her son's class attracted international attention and led in part to her to write a book. Her essays have appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Wired, and other publications. And Alice Drager joins us in the studio to talk about sex education and about her new book, The Talk. Welcome back to Current State.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
So outside speakers, outside educators have been approved. These will be coming from Willow Adolescent Health Center Outreach Educational Program and EVE, End Violent Encounters. Willow's affiliated with Ingham County Health Department. Broadly here, how do you feel about reallowing these organizations back into the classroom?
You know, it all depends on what ends up happening, and we'll see what happens, but I have some hopes that things will get better this year. Really, I would love it if our own teachers in the district were fully empowered to do this kind of teaching, and it's somewhat frustrating to me that they're not. But sex ed is a hot potato. It's a political difficulty for a lot of school districts, and ours is not an exception. And so one of the things school districts often do is hire in outside educators, because that way somebody else is dealing with the hot political issue. And if you have to get rid of them, it's pretty easy to get rid of an outside consultant compared to dealing with a teacher.
Listeners of a certain age will remember a day when the biology teacher, the high school biology teacher, got tasked with that. And it would seem to make sense, but that broadly, that is not what's taken shape here.
They actually do still teach reproductive health in the biology classes in the East Lansing schools. But what ends up happening in the health class is that they deal specifically with sexual relationships and start dealing with the stuff that the state requires, such as talking about abstinence and talking about birth control and these sorts of things. So that ends up happening in the health class in a lot of the classes. And I must say, what bothered me the most about what I observed last year was the inaccuracies that were being portrayed. For example, really overblowing the ineffectiveness of condoms, when in fact, if condoms are used correctly, they're more effective than they were leading kids to believe. They had the kids play a game last year where they rolled a dice, 1 through 6, everybody was assigned a number. And the claim was in the game that 1 out of 6 times you have sex, the condom's going to break and you're going to get pregnant. So by 8 rolls of the dice, everybody in the class was pregnant. The underlying message of which was really condoms don't work. And I don't want my son being told condoms don't work. Mm. They're certainly not perfect. Backup birth control is a good idea. But certainly I would like it if boys understood that condoms help prevent disease transmission, not just in straight relationships, but in gay relationships, and that they're important to use.
Have you been involved with the board or with any of this discussion that's led to where we are today since a year ago?
I did some follow-up right afterwards just to let them know that, you know, I was available if they wanted to talk to me. But I think that what happened with the tweets was so explosive that in some ways I wanted to just step back and let the folks who needed to take over do that. And we have a lot of wonderful people in the district. And in fact, some folks on the school board, many of the high school students, we have a fantastic group at the high school called Students for Gender Equality. And they actually had been working on these issues in great frustration for a couple years before I came in, and I didn't know that they were doing that. So I really thought they were fully empowered to go ahead and take over and start making the positive changes, and that's what they've been doing. The Sex Ed Advisory Board had not been meeting, and it was supposed to have been meeting according to state law. So the Lansing City Pulse actually uncovered this and showed we were in violation of the state law. So they did start meeting. They revised the committee. It now includes 2 high school students who are very feminist positive young women who think very clearly about sex. And so things, I think, are getting better, but we'll have to see where it goes from here. You know, part of the reason I wrote this book, The Talk, which is a book Amazon Kindle Singles asked me to write, was because it's very clear to me that no matter what goes on in the schools, it's never going to be enough. Kids are always going to hear things wrong sometimes. Things are not going to be communicated well. And so it's incredibly important to understand you cannot outsource sex education to your school. Yes, it may happen in schools, but you absolutely have to do it at home.
Right now, Michigan school districts, my understanding is, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, Michigan school districts are not legally obligated to offer sex education. But if a district chooses to do so, it is required to include content on abstinence. Does information about abstinence, how much information about abstinence belongs in a responsible approach to sex ed for preteens and teens?
Yeah, it doesn't take very long to teach abstinence. It's a simple concept. Don't have sex. And if you don't have sexual relations with another person, there's no way to transmit a disease that can only be transmitted by sex, and there's no way to get pregnant. Although there are other ways not to get pregnant if you want to have sexual relations too, of course, but they don't go into those. So it's very easy, actually, to teach abstinence. The problem with teaching abstinence is the way it's typically taught, and that is to teach it in a way that suggests that any kind of sex outside of a man and woman having sex within the context of a marriage is wrong. And so the real challenge about that is because it has this heavy moral overtone that suggests to kids that if they're having sex outside of a marriage and if they're having sex prior to marriage, that that's somehow shameful. And this especially gets laid on the girls. So I saw this happening in this classroom last year where this guest educator was brought in a guy to tell his story of abstinence and non-abstinence. And one of the things he said to the kids was, when you find the girl that says no, that's the girl you want. And first of all, I was so disturbed by that because I don't teach my son that you go after the girl who says no. I teach my son the girl who says no is the girl you politely step away from, right? That she has the right to say no. But more to the point, what that was saying to all of the girls in the room was the girl who says yes is some kind of slut. The girl who says yes is not the girl you'd want to really be with. And I think that's a terrible message. And that's what ends up getting taught as abstinence. It's not taught as a simple option, in which case you can avoid pregnancy and avoid disease transmission. It's taught instead as a way to give the message that sex is shameful. And I think that's a dangerous, problematic message for kids because it drives sex underground.
Alice Drager is our guest here on Current State. Alice is an East Lansing resident and an historian of medicine and science, a sex researcher, writer, and patient advocate. We're talking about changes in sex education in the East Lansing schools and related topics, including her new book, The Talk. What other kinds of information belong in a sex education class for adolescents?
You know, one of the things I heard from a lot of local high schoolers after the sex ed tweets went viral, a lot of the kids from around here wanted to meet with me and sit down and talk. And I did that with a lot of these high school students. One of the things I was hearing, particularly from the girls, was that nobody had prepared them for the emotional consequences of sex, that they had been told about birth control options to some extent. They had been explained pregnancy to some extent. There had been discussions of how a sperm meets an egg, but that nobody had explained that when you have sex, a lot of times your emotions get involved, that in many cases you and your partner don't feel the same about it, that you may have difficulty talking about it. And so one of the things I really recommend in this book is trying to work with kids to understand that part of the reason sex is so intense is because it can be a very emotional experience for a lot of people, and those emotions can differ. So I wish that in our districts we began to deal with those issues and not just deal with a sort of horror show mechanics of disease and pregnancy, but started dealing with really the lifelong approach to sex that I think is much more positive.
Your new book is called The Talk, Helping Your Kids Navigate Sex in the Real World. To what extent was the episode at East Lansing, did that lead to your writing the book?
It actually grew directly out of it. So what happened was a lot of parents contacted me from all over the world, actually, and asked me, how do I talk to my kid about sex? Because you're right, we can't trust our school districts to do it for us. And so I took what I had learned in my own parenting, but also had learned from doing 20 years of work with parents who have children born with unusual bodies. So that includes children born with sex anomalies, including intersex conditions, parents who had had conjoined twins, parents of kids with dwarfism. And what I had learned from those parents was that a really good way to develop a way of talking about difficult subjects was to try to get off what I call the shame pride access, which is this place we tend to exist with our children where we're constantly either signaling to them, that's shameful or that makes me proud, that's shameful or that makes me proud. And if we constantly have all our talk around that, signaling everything about shame and pride, then what happens is the kids feel constantly judged by us and they feel unsafe coming to us with difficult questions, with things that confuse them, and certainly with problems because they get the message that problems are things that are shameful. So I really recommend in the book trying to develop a way of talking with kids about sex, but also every other difficult subject, where we try to take back some of the emotion and stop trying to pull our kids to the pride end of the life spectrum, and instead just have realistic conversations. I'm really all for reality-based conversations.
Just an excerpt here from your book, The Talk. According to cultural conventions, The Talk is a short monologue about plain vanilla intercourse between, quote, a man and a woman who love each other very much, unquote. In other words, it's inadequate, unrealistic, and ineffective if your goal is preparing your child for sex in the real world.
Absolutely.
How do you contend with parents or anybody here who comes at this from a different angle, who comes at it from any other angle besides yourself? The smart supporters, I suppose. How do you try to persuade? How do you respond to people who look at this morass differently from you?
I try to point out to them that reality indicates to us that a lot of people will have sex prior to marriage. In fact, the great majority of us will have sex outside of marital relationships. And so it's really important that people feel like they can deal with that in a way that is responsible, confident, healthy. And what ends up happening is if we constantly give the message that the only appropriate place for sex is in the context of a marriage, what we end up telling people is everything else is something you should do on the sly, you should do underground, and you should be ashamed of if something goes wrong. And in some cases, things are going to go wrong. You're going to have a disease, or you're going to have some sort of sexual dysfunction, or you're going to have an emotional reaction to a relationship that's difficult to manage. So I think it's really important that people recognize if you really love the people around you and you really want to empower them to have a healthy, positive life and to have positive sexual relations that are built on mutual trust and are not being done on the sly, underground, in hidden places because you're ashamed of what you're doing, then what you've got to do is signal to them that sex is not a shameful activity, that it's a normal part of human life. And that's part of what we started talking with our son really early about, as I talk about in the book, that we started talking with him fairly early on about that the reason people have sex is because it feels good. If it's being done right, it feels good. And that's why people seek it out. It's not because it's some magical thing that only married people do. It's because it feels good. Like eating can feel good. Exercise can feel good. It's one of the things that, especially when you're an adult, it can feel really good. And so we know that when something feels good, sometimes we make bad decisions about it. So how do we think about balancing the pleasure aspects of it with also balancing responsibility to ourselves and responsibility to the people we're engaging with?
Back to the outside educators that will be coming back to East Lansing Public Schools, will you be attending any of their sessions like you did the SMART sessions last year?
No, my son, thankfully, is done with that class, and I don't think you're allowed, I don't know, but I don't think you're allowed to sit in classes in which your children are not participating. That said, we do have, I won't call them spies, but we do have people who are in the classrooms as the high school students who have promised to let me know how it's going. So we're going to find out how things are going that way. And of course, kids today are armed with a lot of electronic devices, and so they're fully capable of doing things like recordings if they want to do that, right, and to be able to report back to the rest of us what's going on in the classrooms.
One question I'm really curious to ask you about here. One noticeable impact of the internet has been access to pornography. As someone who has researched sex, your focus has been the history of teaching, I take it. But what kinds of impacts do you think access to internet pornography is having?
If we look at the data from studies around the world, what we find is that when there's easier access to pornography, sexual assault rates actually drop. And so that suggests to us that it fulfills some kind of need for some people that allows them to get the pleasure that they need without, in fact, harming other people at the rates that otherwise occur. That said, we also know that some sexual pornography is absolutely exploitative. And so we know that it can hurt the people with whom it's occurring. We also know that access to that kind of stuff for children can be confusing, upsetting, can send kids down a wrong understanding of the way sex really works. And so we don't actually have data on what happens to kids who get exposed to pornography too early, part of the reason being that it's difficult ethically to do research on children. And certainly you couldn't do a randomized control trial where you expose some kids to pornography and don't expose others and find out what happens to them. So it's difficult for us to know what the effect is on children. But this is like the number one question I get from parents is, how do I talk to my kids about pornography? And so I go through that in the book. And I also talked about it on the Savage Lovecast with Dan Savage a couple weeks ago. The main thing, I think, is being realistic about it and having the conversations as your kids are getting to that age. What is pornography? And the way I describe it, again, is a descriptive conversation. Not getting into, at the beginning, the heavy judgmental stuff, saying it's something that adults use for visual stimulation in order to get sexually aroused, that's the goal of pornography. And then we've talked with our son, and I recommend talking with your children as they get older about how pornography is produced, that some of it is produced with willing participants, but some of it is not. Some of it is upsetting. How are ways that we can disengage from things that are upsetting, or if things become too interesting to us, how can we manage that level of interest? And start having realistic discussions about that, about how to walk away, how to recognize what's an appropriate interest or an inappropriate interest in terms of your participation in something. Because to my mind, this again models the whole issue of sexual relationships, and it allows us to talk about, did the other party consent to what I'm watching, for example? Am I in a situation where this is a healthy situation? So beginning to have those important conversations.
Alice Dreger's an East Lansing resident and an historian of medicine and science, a sex researcher, writer, and patient advocate. We've been talking about changes in sex education, specifically in the East Lansing School District, but also about her new book, The Talk, which is available how?
It's available right now only as an Amazon Kindle single, but it'll be available in print within a month or so. And I just want to also mention that the book I wrote before this, Galileo's Middle Finger, is now available actually in paperback, so people can get that online and through Schuller Books and everywhere else around town.
Alice Dreger, thank you.
Thank you.